Hey, thanks everybody for coming out. I know this is kind of the period of year, of the time of year where it's event mania, and there's a conference a week, an event a day. And what we want to do is try to differentiate your experience today from what you might normally get in a normal setting. So we wanted to kick it off with a little provocative video and then just kind of get into some really cool stuff that's being done in this space. I think, as the person that's leading citizen engagement at GSA, I recognize how important this is for us and our agencies to get the message out effectively, to get engagement right, to get participation right, not to think of these as watchwords or as fads or as compliance things, but this is just the way the world is operating now. We've got to wake up and smell the bacon. So I'm really glad that we've been able to assemble a group of people with us today that really have some expertise in the area. As I always say, walk the talk. It's not about just talking about how we're delivering better engagement, better participation, better transparency in government, but let's go right to the front line, to the people that are the ones that are doing it. And we're really fortunate to have, I think, three people that are experts in the area doing really cool things, and some of which we want to share with you today. Janice Knoll is the director of the Division of eHealth Marketing at the National Center for Health Marketing, which is part of the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at HHS. She's the leader behind CDC's communication technology efforts and manages the CDC website. Janice, of course, has a stint at GSA in our usability solutions group, and so we're pleased that we've been able to snag Janice on a detail, actually, back to GSA to help us in standing up some of our social media citizen engagement activities. So, Janice, welcome. We also have Amanda Emick, who is the acting director of new media for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She's working to integrate some of the traditional and social media strategies for the department across a lot of the agency mission areas. And for the past 5 years, she's served as the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service press officer and more recently the Director of Strategic Communications. So, Amanda, nice to have you here. And Liz Olmo is with us. She's the Director for Strategic Requirements, Capabilities, and Assessment Division. It's a long name, Liz, at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Office of Policy. She oversees the writing of the department's 5-year strategic plan and the development and integration of the strategic requirements process. So, hey, what's really cool here about these three people is we have a usability expert. We have somebody that's actually in the communications business. And we have somebody that's a strategic planner. These are not technical CIO folks. These are people on the front line trying to get communications and interaction right from a usability, from a user experience, if you will, to borrow an old term. So I think we've got the right crew assembled. So if we can go to, I'm going to say a couple of things about where we are in the Open Government Directive, where we are with open government. You don't want to hear me too much. You actually want to hear the folks that are really making this happen in their agencies. We've just run through a very interesting period. We are moving, I think, in general, from talking about open government to actually delivering open government. And that's what's really important. We are learning how to interact with the public. We are learning how to interact with our employees. We're learning how to integrate ideas across levels and tiers of government. And there are some really fast-moving initiatives underway, both centrally in the administration and within each of the agencies, that I think will be some real game-changing things in the next 12 to 18 months. So buckle up. I think we're ready to rock and roll in some of these areas. We have just finished conducting not too many weeks ago the first public dialogue session with virtually all of the major departments and agencies. You've seen the results. You've seen some of the news stories. You've seen the plans that have come out as a result of that. You can look at it in many ways, but to be able to hold a public dialogue with the federal government across all of its departments and agencies with a simple interactive tool and get the kinds of ideas that we got, I think, was pretty astonishing. And I give Bev Godwin and her team at GSA all the credit in the world because they stood up this thing in less than 60 days and actually got it ready to go out to all of the agencies. So we're very proud of that at GSA. We go to the next slide. What's really important, though, is that we do something with this stuff, that we don't just check a box and have a compliance exercise of I held a dialogue, I produced a plan, I'm going to get a green on the scorecard. We've got to illustrate how we're engaging citizens and bringing them into the foray of policymaking, program delivery, service delivery, operational improvement. This is a good example of an agency that already on its web page shows how it's built some of the dialogue results into what it's trying to do in transparency, in innovation, in greater opportunities for participation. So this is what we want to do. We want to inculcate a culture change in government of not doing the activities for the sake of doing them, but to change the way in which we're communicating and interacting with citizens, with businesses, and with other levels of government. We can go to the next slide. What's next? We're rapidly moving into challenges and contest. We are, as a result of the administration's push in this area, all the agencies are expected to do some contest and challenges. This is a brand new area for us in government. There are a lot of cities, a lot of states that have been doing this. The idea is that we don't have all of the answers in our policy shops and our program offices. There are experts in the world that can help us solve some problems. We're not trying to actually set us up for failure. I think we all recognize we need to start small, start simple, kind of build out, get some expertise in how to engage people into more than just soliciting ideas, but creativity in delivering solutions in different ways. So I think we're going to have a healthy dose of some very engaging citizen contest and specific segmented contest for parts of the populations that are served by our agencies. If we go to our next, the other thing I think is really cool is start looking at the high-value data sets, or all data sets, quite honestly, on data.gov and other places. This has been thought of as a giant dumping ground for data, and that just go in with a vacuum cleaner and try to find what is of use. This is an evolving concept. We are improving the search capabilities on data.gov so citizens and businesses can find what they are looking for quickly. And we have really interesting tools that are being put up, like Data Masher, example on the top right, where anybody can go in and actually create their own mashup based upon official government data and get some answers to some really interesting questions, like what is health delivery like in my area? What are my SAT scores in my high school? How do they compare to other districts? By the way, where are the high cancer rates? Where are the worst places to live? You don't have to, do much effort to find the information out and present it in a really cool spatially way to you. Where are we going? Another example of just being able to take information and create factoids that might be of interest to consumers and citizens and industry. And the Federal Register even is something quite difficult to make exciting. But, if you can get onto a website and it tells you here are the business opportunities today, tomorrow, last week, and those coming up in 2 weeks, and the ones that are geographically important to your area, I think we're creating a value proposition of presenting data in a little bit different way. So this is a really, it's an evolving area, but one I think in which we're going in the right direction. And last, I think where are we going? And where are we going has to do with really, again, moving away from compliance to achieving some long-term changes in how we're operating government. This is hard stuff, and I think Janice and Amanda and Liz are going to talk about, it's not always easy to address these cultural things in your agencies to inculcate an understanding of what engagement and collaboration are truly about. So we have to change some of the incentive processes. We've got to put some things in place that really institutionalize a culture of engagement. We've got to really drill down on transparency and make sure that we're not just putting anything up, but that we're putting really valuable information up in a transparent way that citizens and businesses can use. We have to think about participation and collaboration in terms of what is it I'm trying to achieve with the public, what is it I'm trying to achieve with a specific segment of my delivery or customer base, what is it that I am actually seeking innovation for from a product or a service delivery, refining the approach, over time. So I think we've got some really interesting initiatives underway in government. I thought this would be a great chance for us to first highlight some of that and then open it up, as always. I'm a big believer in interactive dialogue, just having a conversation with you folks about what it is that you'd like to ask questions about. But let me bring, let me bring Janice up. Janice is on detail to us from CDC at GSA. She has been involved in the IDEA scale implementation, some of the challenge and contest area, but she's been running some cool things at CDC as well. So let me turn it over to Janice.
Thank you. All right, Carol. You ready to stay up?
Here we go. Thank you. We have 5-10 minutes to basically tell you about two different areas of work. One is the CDC social media work we've been doing, why we're doing it, and then also what we're doing here at the Center for New Media and Citizen Engagement, which I'm very proud to be a part of. Carol, do you mind flipping? I'm going to step back a moment in terms of what we're finding is some of these terms like open government and social media are being used fairly interchangeably, and they're not. Those are not interchangeable terms. You could put all the data in the world up on the website, but if it's not social, if there aren't things to do with it, even if it's high value, what's the point of that? Or if you're putting up information nobody really cares about. Or if you're providing opportunities for social media that, again, your users aren't interested in. So I think I always bring it back to that model of it should be user-centered. You should start with your users and what they need, what they want, and not just assume that if we build it, they will come. So one of the things I've spent a lot of my last 4 years at CDC doing is convincing people, why are we doing this? Why are we spending our tax dollars this way? It's a much easier sell today than it was 4 years ago. But the bottom line is, this is where people are. And if people are getting their information out in the social atmosphere, that's where we have to be. So if they're getting information about STDs in Second Life, if they're talking about how to quit smoking on mobile phones, if they're in blogs talking about which vaccinations to get their kids, that's where we have to be. It's certainly where the commercial entities are. We have to be there, too, as government, not with a regurgitation of all our information verbatim, top to bottom, but being there with those salient points and bringing back folks kind of to, I call it the mothership, the website for more information if they want more detail. So the philosophy that we've had at CDC, and I know GSA also shares, is that basically you want to provide the information, tools, interventions, resources, how, when, where people want them. So if someone wants it in Braille, if somebody wants it in Spanish and large type on a mobile phone, we should be able to provide that, can we? No, but I think that is the goal, and not just arbitrarily doing that, but doing it because we know that's what our users want. Carol, can you flip? And part of you knowing what users want is actually asking them, and that is a concept, is not, again, assuming what they want, but actually seeing where they're using, what tools they're using and why, and tracking that over time. Let me just flip to the next one. And this scary thing is not an amoeba from one of our labs or a bacterium. But to me, in talking with our leadership, it's been one of the best ways I've been able to show that we know from Pew Internet and many other studies that people, particularly on health information, check out about 7 different sources of information. They're not necessarily coming to CDC.gov about flu information. They may be going to WebMD. They may be going to their physician. So increasingly, our audiences, our users, are getting information out here. So we have to have those tentacles out in these spaces to bring them back. And increasingly, it's the you, it's the me that's at the center of this, and I'm consulting all those resources before I'm making a decision. So this constellation doesn't come free. Nothing is free, and it is labor-intensive, but it is critical in terms of not just survival but success. Okay. This is a combination of the approach in the real world we've done with H1N1 this past year. We knew where our audiences were going for information, very quickly ramped up a multitude of tools in different media, from everything from a text messaging program that I think we have about 16,000 subscribers now, to online video. And one of the things that, it really is the gamut of taking this information where people are looking. And not only do we try to take it there, we measure anything that doesn't move. So if you go to the next slide, we're very big on transparency of what's worked and what doesn't. Our metrics dashboard basically reports on which of these tools, you know, where we are in terms of usage, demographics, opinion, et cetera. But it's not just the metrics. And one of the things I did want to mention is that we're not just doing this because it's cool. Certainly it's where our users are. But the bottom line is what we're trying to get to is that more moms are getting their kids vaccinated, or people are starting recycling programs, or people are coming more prepared to the airport and, you know, reducing time in the wait line. So it really is, we're shooting for an impact. And what I'm hoping to encourage here today is really more measurement of that. Not that just we're doing it, we have the users, but what is the end impact and what are we trying to measure there? So let me keep going. And it does have an impact. We do know that people who use these tools, we've done measurement, not only you know, are they finding what they need, but they're more satisfied. And that satisfaction translates to recommendations, trustworthiness, et cetera. And that's very important when we're government, when declining trust. If you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer, trust has been declining. But increasingly, especially this recent study, you're finding that instead of just referring to people like me or talking to other moms or other people like me, I'm looking for that expert voice. So these social media tools provide that opportunity to give the expert voice as well as, you know, adding on to it my opinion of that. Let's go ahead, Carol. So in terms of how these things interrelate, and I'm going to wrap up quickly, there are a lot of different ways to be open, and just wanted to leave you with that thought. It doesn't just mean putting data up. It doesn't mean asking opinions. It means being open. It means being open internally, not just with your external users. But I think it's very hard to be an open organization if you're not open with your internal, with your employees. So looking at different ways to collaborate and looking at being in many of these spaces, that's the highest trust factor. Okay, Carol. As Dave mentioned, and I'm not going, where'd my slide go? Oh, it's going to build. Okay. The Center for New Media and Citizen Engagement, GSA, it's very new. It's been my honor to be part of it since January. And this is an incomplete mission statement, but I like the way it says it, is that what we're trying to do is incubate, accelerate, make it easier for agencies to use these types of tools, make it easier for citizens to provide that input, and make them, you know, hopefully where it's fun and they want to do that. And also to do that efficiently and effectively. And the audience for the center is primarily federal agencies, but it's also could be state and local governments. And the thing that attracted me to this project and to this work, if you can go to the next one, Carol, Dave told you about the citizen engagement tool, is why do we all – it makes no sense for us to be doing Section 508 24 times, privacy policy, accessibility policy on a similar tool, you're not just 24 times for 24 agencies, but all of the folks under that. And I'm one of those folks under that. So CDC is in HHS. And it's not how I think most government employees want to spend their time, is reinventing the wheel or doing something that's already been done. But the beauty of this project certainly is that there was great participation by, you know, 23 agencies. That's fabulous. Also, if you go to the next one, Carol, you know, it's also that the numbers were phenomenal, 31,000 votes, 4,000 comments, et cetera. But it was also that we did it one time and replicated and leveraged the work that other people had done. And that's the model, I think, that is really the game changer here and that we want to continually do. Dave mentioned the challenge and contest prize, so I won't go over that. A couple other projects we're working on is FedSpace, which is basically an intranet 2.0 for federal workers. More to come on that very soon, a very exciting project. And then the citizen engagement platform, which I like to call the safe zone, so that rather than, again, the idea scale version that we did for the open engagement tool, again, doing those policy things one time and putting it somewhere where all the agencies can get that is the direction that we want to go, and that platform is a citizen engagement platform. And let me see. And I think that is it. It's a pleasure being here and glad to entertain any specifics. Thank you.
Thanks, Janice. I think you've teed up already some key things that we probably want to talk about in the Q&A piece of this, the so what measure, what's this resulting in, some of the policy barriers, things like that. So I think we'll get into that in some of the interactives part. Let me bring Amanda up. Amanda's actually got some really interesting things underway, one of which probably a lot of people know about, Apps for Healthy Kids, which I think she's going to share a little bit about that. But there's also some other pieces to engagement and collaboration that I think is also a big piece of USDA at the Forest Service that she wants to share with you. So, Amanda.
Okay, thank you. Janice teed up a really important point for USDA. We are the second largest department with over 100,000 employees. We're worldwide. We have the third largest air fleet in the United States, if you didn't know that, thanks to the Forest Service. All of these issues just show that we're not based in Washington. So something that we struggle with often is getting beyond the Beltway and being relevant in people's lives wherever they are. Go ahead. So Apps for Healthy Kids is a really exciting initiative we have where we're trying to rely on the creativity of people, not people inside the Beltway, not within USDA necessarily, but really figure out what makes sense and what's most relevant in your own lives. We know that we have My Pyramid, which gives great information to consumers. We have some games that we've developed for children as well, but there's got to be a better way to do it. Right? We all have that moment when you're in the grocery store, when you're at the restaurant, you say, man, I really wish I knew X. And we really want to tap into people's individual experiences and perceptions of what's important and how it makes the most sense. So Apps for Healthy Kids is built upon a data set that we released in December onto data.gov, which is the 1,000 most common foods and their nutritional values. The idea is that we target the audience between tweens especially and parents who are the nutritional gatekeepers to try to develop games and apps respectively for those audiences. And we didn't arrive at this on our own. We engaged with stakeholders early in the game. And with the great help of the White House OSTP office, we brought in gaming experts, entertainment experts, people in the nutrition field to help us actually design the contest. So not the games and the apps, but actually figure out what's the right thing to ask. We had never done this before, uncharted territory. So we wanted to not pretend like we knew all of the answers, really just asking people in the field. Let's see. We have almost 9,000 supporters, so hopefully after today you guys will help bump that number up a little bit. And we're reviewing some submissions now. So the contest closes June 30th, and that was another piece of information that we got from the field saying 3 months was the right time to have it open for people. We wanted kids to also have the opportunity to make this a part of their curriculum. So how great would it be if a school could have a classroom that built an app that won Apps for Healthy Kids? It's also plugged into, you can't see it on the bottom there, but it's with the First Lady's Let's Move initiative, which is really exciting that there's just so much excitement about this initiative, and everybody has a stake in health and sharing this information. So we're stepping beyond our comfort zone, and it's a little scary, and it's okay, but we have a really great support network with OGC and GSA even that have helped us in the White House to step out there. And we're learning as we go. We're not afraid to actually make changes as we realize that things don't work. So that's really important and different for government, realizing that we should be able to adapt and change. Okay? And another one, it's kind of spilled off the screen. This is really different for how the USDA works. The Forest Service does the planning rule, which is basically the overarching framework for all the forests and grasslands and how those lands are going to be used. We developed this massive plan, and it goes through the rulemaking process that is often painful and not without legal challenges. So what we wanted to do was put rulemaking out in the light, kind of opening up the black box and letting people be involved in it and really closing the geographical gaps. It's not just, you know, people don't know where to find the information on the Federal Register. Over 70 million people receive drinking water from national forests. They have a say in what these lands are used for. So we have a blog where we're asking questions to try to get closer to the mark when we're developing the draft. And then we'll put it on the Federal Register and solicit official comments later on. But we hope that through ongoing feedback in the beginning, that we'll get closer to the right kind of rule and then have a better product once it's actually submitted and goes through the process. So in the interest of time, I'll kind of wrap up here and then leave it for specific questions.
That's really cool, man. I think the rulemaking piece of it, that's just a completely different approach than what, you know, has traditionally been the case. So I think that's very exciting. I want to bring Liz up. I know some of you, if not all of you, hopefully many of you, remember the Quadrennial Homeland Security Review that was done in collaboration with NAPA. I see Danielle's here from NAPA. I don't know if Lena's here or not, which is a great activity. And I think, you know, great lessons learned have come out of that, which Liz wants to share with you. One of which, I think the term that she has on one of her slides is the citizen experience. And, you know, a lot of us in the web world always think about website visits and traffic, and we forget that what we're bringing people to the site for is to have a positive experience. So let me bring Liz up to talk about that.
Hello. I'm in the wrong place. I'm not an expert. I have a deep secret. I don't have a Twitter account. Never used one. No one in our shop is IT oriented. I'm a policy analyst.
Yay!
Hence the term, an adventure into Wonderland, because we had no idea what we were getting into. Now, the Quadrennial Homeland, the next slide, please, thank you. The Quadrennial Homeland Security Review is a short burst, intensive activity that the Department of Homeland Security will be engaging in every 4 years. So this was our first attempt at just doing the report. We had been given a mandate by Congress to engage our stakeholders. Now, if anyone has had any interaction with Homeland Security, our stakeholders consist of not only the 22 components within the Homeland, within the department. It includes Department of Justice, Commerce, DOD, across the interagencies, state and local, and by state and local I mean governors, firefighters, sheriffs. We were told to reach out to our academics and to the public. No problem. Okay. So we had no more than 3 different strategies to figure out how we were going to do this. 3 months, threw them all away. Couldn't figure it out because it was massive. In the end, we've reached out to probably about, you know, 200,000 people. Maybe, actually, our numbers are about 1 million. We engaged 350 feds. We did a lot. The point to this, the tool was one IT response for a massive extended engagement. And most of us in government need to understand that. When we talk truly about policy development, it's a big effort. And we did the smartest thing we could do. We got experts to help us with that. NAPA. We had to do it because we would never have been able to engage our public the way we needed to engage in writing an actual policy document without them. And we also had another thing that was very, very critical, or we would have failed. The lady is on the front page, our secretary. Do not engage in this if you do not have leadership. I'm telling you, because you are doing something very, very new. You are actually going out to the public before you have a completed policy document and having them react. We did not do that. We actually invited the public to help us engage and give us feedback as we went through the summer of building this. This is not something government is known to do. We usually do things in the back, do it a fait accompli, show it to everybody, get a response, and maybe we change it. We did not do that. This was critical because it also drove how we did this dialogue. It wasn't one time, put it up there, quickly, you know, put your feet in the water and walk away. We actually really gave ourselves a lot of pain by doing 3 dialogues, iterative, 3 weeks apart from each other, which was actually more painful for poor Napa, who had to figure out how they were going to do this for us. The point of that was that was how we got to transparency with all of our stakeholders. They saw us change. They saw us change our minds. They saw us change our content, and they felt like they were actually engaged. A couple of things that are really critical when you do that is to manage expectations. Okay, the reality is we were dreaming that we were going to get thousands of comments and thousands of impact of ratings. We didn't get exactly a lot of that, but we also knew that we weren't going to be able to take every single thing that was given to us and drive a nice bright line between what the comments that were given and how it impacted the report. So the most important thing, and this is, again, where we spent a lot of time, was how do we communicate to our stakeholders, to our participants, to our dialogue members, what exactly was expected of them, and we put it right up on the front page. Very important to let them know, you know, we are iterating this stuff. It's not policy yet. There have been no decisions made. We will take your information. We'll share it with our study groups. We had study groups to do this. And join us for the next dialogue to see how the entire participant group changed what we were thinking. So right up front, we try to set that standard. And that was actually very successful for us and helped us. Next page, please. I think this is what Mr. McClure was alluding to. We were very, very sensitive to the experience that our participants were going to engage in. Because, frankly, if you saw the before the issues, I mean, how many of you all sit around and think a lot about immigration and cybersecurity and how the two are interrelated? Or, a national risk assessment. I mean, this was some really dense stuff. So NAPA helped us to understand that how we portrayed that content and how we engaged in the things we gave our folks to relay their thoughts was important. So we had tags, we had rating, they were able to comment on other people's comments. One thing I have to tell you that we didn't get it right the first time exactly, okay? We had a very limited set of content. But what we did do is we learned, and the next dialogue was different, and the next dialogue was different. We kept iterating and listened to our people and changed, and frankly, we got a lot of comments about that. We kept getting better, and that's okay. It's important for us as government folks to understand we won't get it perfect the first time, and that's fine. Just learn from it and keep changing, and the public is with us. It was wonderful. Just a couple things I learned. The next page, please. We spend a lot of time thinking about tools and IT, but really it's still about the strategies and the work behind it, the communication strategies, the decision strategies. You have to put that work into it. If we hadn't sat down and spent the 3 months building our huge engagement strategy, which, oh, by the way, also included picking up the phone and literally calling people, we called over 500, 600 people directly. I don't even know how many now, but I mean, literally, that old thing, you know, that you dial, we did that. We asked folks up front to write. We sent letters out. I mean, we engaged every single way that we could, and then to drive them with the single focus of driving folks to the dialogue. Okay, so it isn't just about putting it up on the web. You do have to do some work on the outside. You know, the last point about setting expectations. The next. This was our principle. This was the principle that we had for the QHSR. Engage early. Before we even stood up any study groups, our secretary sent out a letter, told them what the issues were, and asked them to write papers. People actually did it. We actually got papers back. That helped us to inform what was going on the dialogue at the beginning. And then we had 3 dialogues, and we blanketed and let everyone know. We kept letting them know, kept letting them know. We keep reaching out. We kept calling people. We kept sending emails. We kept sending Twitters. We really, really, really reached out. And then at the end, our third and final dialogue, and then also you go to the NAPA homepage right now. Here's the report. This is what came out. And we let everyone know. Because there's nothing more irritating than you to participate and you spend your hours, you know, 6 minutes or an hour, whatever, and you never get a note back that we're done and here's what happened. I know that irritates me. So we made sure that was part of the process. And then the best advice is use experts. Like I said, we weren't it. And then listen to them. Absolutely listen to them. And if you're the expert, help folks to understand that. We did have to include a social media spin. We couldn't just do regular how we're going to talk to our people. This was also important as to how we were going to present the content. I can't express how important that is. I think Amanda made a very good point about we knew who our audience was, and we really had to work on how we set up our media. And then the back end is the analysis. This is the thing we had to think about, too. We knew we were going to get a lot of input, and we didn't have a lot of time. So you got to think about that, too. And for the experts in the audience, help folks to think through that, because that's really pretty. That's, I think, one of the toughest things. You're going to get a lot of information from the work that you put up. How do you incorporate that and then quickly to iterate your next outreach to your public? And listen to the experts. Okay, thanks.
Well, first of all, Liz, I just want to make sure that you didn't refer to me as Mr. McClure because of any kind of age difference between the two of us. And then second thing, I think we would let's go ahead and vote Liz in as an honorary IT geek, okay? Let's do that. So you can move up from the... So do we have microphones? Can we get some microphones for them? And then let's just open this up to questions from you guys and drive it in whichever directions you want. There's a lot of stuff that's on the table here, measurement, policies, outcomes, all this kind of stuff, culture change. Questions from the audience. Raise your hand and shout it out, I guess.
How hard was this to get through your own organizations? Because I know oftentimes folks, if you're doing the collaborative at DHS, and you say we're going to develop this in an open way, people go, and their first reaction is to panic. How did you sell this, that this was an okay, a safe way to go?
So it's a response.
Well, again, I think the first thing I have to say, is this one?
Yep.
Is leadership. We had to get, and we had extraordinary leaders. I mean, Secretary Napolitano and Deputy Secretary Lute actually were really in favor, and really, that was important. You've got to get that, okay? Now, so the top layer was with us. After that, it was a little tough because, again, the timeline for this is we began back in 2009. Now, as you mentioned, I mean, light year change from when we began in January 2009 with how government was using this type of media and even the thought of how to use it. We weren't quite there when we started with the QHSR. So, frankly, getting through OGC, privacy, CRCL, CIO security, OMB, the Federal Register, the Paperwork Reduction Act. I mean, there were some serious barriers that we had to overcome so that and help them. And this is where the culture change came in, was to cast that mind that we weren't doing a paper survey, that we were, as you said, actually releasing pre-decisional, pre-approved information. It took me 3 months to get that through, talking to people and going back and explaining. And I'll be honest, it was hard, okay? It was hard. However, once folks got on board and understood what we were doing, actually, I was surprised how much they got behind us to do it, because it was just a matter of changing your perspective of what government's role is and what the public's role was. Once we understood that, it was okay. And, of course, we got all the legal documents signed, so that made a difference.
Another one? Another question?
Can I just add
one
thing?
Oh, yeah, Janice, of course.
No, because it's a great question, and I have yet to completely figure that out. But what I have learned is that there's strength in numbers, and certainly the Fed Web Managers Council and those of us who, you know, we try to work across agency. A lot of times it's easier to work across agencies than within your own. And so not only do you get strength from the sheer brilliance of other people trying to do this, but you also, I think, get good case studies from others that then you can show your own leadership and vice versa. We try to share anything and everything for exactly that. Doesn't mean it's perfect, but it may be an aspect that somebody else is already thinking of.
Yeah, it's a great comment, because I think there is an informal network, you know, always underneath the fabric of the formal that gets things done. And that's what's happening in a lot of this, is that a lot of sharing is being done with the people in the trenches to actually get some of the barriers overcome with some examples and some real-world things that are going on. Yeah, exactly. Although Janice has educated us on what social means, remember. Yeah. You have to speak up really loud.
Webcontent.gov is a fantastic resource. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be possible for us to do that.
So. Yeah, so a lot of the individual agencies obviously have their own content and practices and experiences that they're posting. And Janice, we have at GSA as well, we try to amalgamate as much of that as possible and make it available to everyone. It's all, you know, it's open for anyone to use. So what's the web address site?
It's webcontent.gov, and
webcontent.gov.
On the open engagement tool, open citizen engagement tool, there's a whole section where we've actually posted all the policy documents. That's part of it too. Why we do it? Let me cut and paste and search and replace and make it easy on us.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Monica from GSA. When we watched that video at the beginning, and it said that we don't have to go to get the news comes to us. That struck me as so true. You go to Yahoo and they're telling you what's happening or what's trending now and all that stuff. But then the next line said, we don't have to even go get products and services anymore. It's going to come to us. So I guess I wonder, in a dream world, what would that really look like? Like, I can't picture it. Does anybody have a thought on that?
Dream world?
Well, it's a bit unreasonable, I think, to expect any person to go to a .gov website necessarily. They're not always the easiest to navigate, I'll be the first to admit. So I think it's really being true to the stakeholders. So if people are getting information on some third-party site, let's be a part of it. Kind of listening to where people are talking and then joining them, that's the ideal. And then hopefully the .gov sites will serve as a portal in getting people to resources. Department of Agriculture and HHS have some overlap and handoff where we do meat and poultry inspection, but they do fruits and vegetables. There's no reason that we should make people break ties with our site, re-enter the URL. It should just be a seamless pass-through. So kind of becoming a network of government as opposed to stovepiped entities would be ideal.
And I would say the same thing. It may be that I'm not going to take the time to go to cdc.gov or hhs.gov to find out what vaccinations my kid needs, you know, but what I might be is participating on a mommy blog, or I might be looking at WebMD, or I might have subscribed to a text messaging service where, because I'm a mom and I'm within X range and I, you know, et cetera, I have a tailored message that comes directly to me about what vaccinations my children during, you know, through these ages. So I think it's a push strategy and again, delivering it where people are, not necessarily expecting them to come to us.
Yeah, it's actually a push and maybe more so a pull strategy, because in the government we think of pushing everything out or people coming to our site to get everything. We already know we have to think creatively of where do we need to populate the web with our information and service links and be in that world, because that world is not where, as Janice said, everyone's not going to come to a government website. They don't even know which government agency to go to begin with. So I think getting it out into the other media channels is certainly going to be a big benefit for getting our products and services out. Yep. What? Go ahead.
I'm working on cyber awareness right now. And one of the things I've been doing is like global searches of agencies that have cyber awareness programs and things like that. When I saw the information that said apps for healthy kids, what came to mind immediately is, why aren't all these linked? I mean, people are concerned about their kids. When I saw apps for healthy kids, I thought, Well, that's cyber awareness, too. That is, you know, a healthy kid is more than just calories, that kind of thing. So, I mean, cross agencies, it looks like there can be so much more that we can do, even on, like, USA.gov. I mean, when people go in and look for something for, you know, the citizens, tying information together that's related would, I think, be extremely useful for the citizens.
Yep.
And that's a really good point. With Apps for Healthy Kids being part of the First Lady's Let's Move initiative, it does pull in Department of Education because they eat meals at school, but there's also physical activity. It's also HHS is a big part of that in addition to USDA. But something that Liz mentioned was really important is having an iterative process. It's not just, you know, one instance, there you go, we're doing Apps for Healthy Kids and we're out of here. It's really reinforced messaging that we're going to do not only through new media channels, but through traditional media and education and outreach. So instead of it being an and-or approach, it's really an and-also. So we're constantly adding on activities and reaching out to people in different ways so they're constantly reminded of your presence, and then they become more familiar. It's just like brand awareness in a way. You know, if they keep hearing that message, it'll sink in eventually.
You're doing some really interesting things at USA.gov. I think you'll see on USA.gov a new search engine that actually will pull up results from across the government of things related to the search that you're looking on. I think that's an enormous improvement because that's how people interact with government, is through searching on things. And the other is collaboration platform that Janice mentioned. There is a collaboration platform we're trying to get built for all of the federal government inside baseball. But one of the things that does is it builds the awareness across the agencies of just exactly what is going on in common policy program areas, which formal councils and lines of communication might be there, but they only work so well. So I think creating that dynamic will help tremendously. Yes?
I have a question, and if you don't mind me asking the audience, how many people here use Facebook on an almost daily basis? Okay, I think Facebook is a good example of having content services pushed to you based on your surfing habits, and I think that one of the issues for the government to do the same kind of thing is the privacy concerns around that. But I can see what that looks like because I use Facebook multiple times a day, and things are tailored based on the things, the groups that I join and the content that I look at. So do you have any comments on what might be going on in that arena?
Well, I think everything is a challenge. Someone was telling me about a mobile app the other day, and it was based on fitness, trying to get kids more active. And it would be on your mobile phone, and it would geolocate where there are playgrounds and where kids are playing. Great. Great. And of course, you know, I'm going, great, one more, you know. So I think that, again, some of these good intentions, but not so good implementation. And really, you know, I think for government, for us to be looking at what's out there, not assuming that we know, and collaborating, like they both said, is that we are not necessarily the experts on some of this stuff. So, and doing our research and due diligence is a big part of that to me. So, yeah, it's a real concern, and I'd say doing social media in government is like, you know, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. It's a lot, you know, you're in a high heels and going backwards, so it's a whole bunch harder than in the private sector. There are quite a few more hurdles.
Liz?
From a non-Facebook person, but I think we have to also remember one thing, which is something we had to remember when we did the tool. We are the United States government. We do have parameters, and there is a point that we cannot cross where we're starting to go into people's lives and pushing stuff in. So I think there's a lot more that can be done and gotten away with, if you will, because they stand outside of some of the necessary regulatory reasons why the government is held in those constraints that we have to keep in mind as we start to expand and explore and reach out to our citizens. Yeah. I think that's an important principle we need to keep.
Absolutely. Yes, another question in the back.
I was at the JFMIP conference last month, and I think the CIO of Treasury was giving a presentation, and he talked about Treasury looking into having the Treasury email going on Gmail, and somebody from GSA said that they are also looking into that. Is that true, and if so, how does that affect what you guys are doing?
sure thing.
That's Casey's. Yes. There's a. You just want to stand up and say something real brief?
Sure.
It is true that at GSA we are doing market research to look into the possibility of outsourcing our email to a cloud provider. And as we do that, one of the issues is that we have an infrastructure on which we currently run our email system, which is aging. So we either need to make a significant investment to upgrade all of those servers and to re-architect the way it runs to provide more resiliency, or we need to look to the cloud and we need to look to industry to provide that for us. Obviously, a key issue is security. This is a space in which the providers of those cloud email and collaboration services are starting to step up and provide compliant solutions, but we still view that as the government's responsibility, GSA's responsibility, to do all of the FISMA and privacy compliance monitoring. The Federal Cloud Computing Initiative, for which Dave is the program executive, is looking at a shared security program where the work of one agency could be shared in an organized kind of way and other agencies could reuse the work that this centralized program is going to do. So there's a couple of things going on to both look to industry-based cloud solutions but also in a way that's secure, in a way that can be reused and shared from other agencies. But that is something we're looking into and should have some conclusions about the feasibility soon. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and you also have Interior that's moving into a cloud, trying to move into a cloud-based solution across the department. I know of five other agencies, quite honestly, that are seriously looking at it. And what we have to think about is what Casey said, is that let's not do all of this 26, 27 times in terms of the policy, the compliance, the security. If we're going to go to a cloud-based email, we can do it collaboratively with a multi-tenancy if people are interested, or we can at least make sure that we put a process in place that's duplicated across the government without tying up enormous amounts of time and energy on policy and compliance issues. Good deal. Anything else?
Dave?
Yes?
Wait
a minute. The questions are supposed to come from here.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Okay. Since there are so many industry folks here, it's more of a request than a question. Having just survived the Open Government Citizen Engagement Tool, it was a phenomenal process, the best cross-government collaboration I've ever been part of. But much of what we do is trying to make non-compliant tools compliant. Yeah. And as you guys who are out there with these, you know, doing government contracts or procuring tools, and we all sign the contracts that say that it's IOA compliant, or it's secure, or it's met privacy policies, et cetera, we all know they're really not. So this is a really, I think what we're trying to do at the center is raise the bar. Say we are looking at those things. It really is critical. Folks, especially the non-risk-taking agencies, are not going to use these tools if they're not compliant. And we need your help in really raising the bar of things that you develop or modify so they come in at a higher standard. So we can do the cool stuff and not the fixing, which is not fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Good deal. Well, I think that's a great thing to end on. I'm going to leave some time to spare because I know people like to kind of grab people afterwards and maybe throw out a question that they didn't want the entire audience to hear, so we'll leave some time for that. Not for you, Chris. Give me some round of applause for the three panelists. Great job. Thank you much.
Thank you all for being here today. I hope that you can join us on April 20th and for our final lunch before the program year ends on May 17th for Health IT. Thank you to Amanda, Janice, Elizabeth, and Dave for a very insightful and provocative discussion today. And we're adjourned. Thank you.